Chapter one, take two, do.
Nice.
The floor kept swaying. Grover said, "I think I'm getting seasick." When I blinked again, the elevator wasn't an elevator anymore. We were standing in a wooden barge. Charon was pulling us across a dark, oily river swirling with bones, dead fish, and other stranger things. Plastic dolls, crushed carnations, soggy diplomas with gilt edges. "The river sticks," Annabeth murmured. "It's so polluted," Charon said. "For thousands of years, you humans have been throwing in everything as you come across. Hopes, dreams, wishes that never come true. Irresponsible waste management, if you ask me." That was a passage from Chapter 18, Annabeth Does Obedience School, from Percy Jackson and the Olympians, The Lightning Thief, Book 1.
By Rick Riordan, yeah.
Ah, yes, by Rick Riordan. Rick R.
Sorry. Thank you for doing that reading.
You're welcome, Brianna.
Thank you, Maddie. This is Chapter 1, Take 2, the podcast where we discuss adaptations of books into movies.
A book to film movie review. Sorry, I just think it's really catchy.
Yeah. If you are an avid listener to our podcast of a whole three episodes previous to this one,
woo!
You will notice that we have changed things up a little bit. So just bear with us as we adapt.
We're learning. You're enjoying. Come on the journey with us.
As Maddie told us, we are going to be covering Percy Jackson and the Olympians, The Lightning Thief. So that's, the book is called The Lightning Thief. It is from the series Percy Jackson and the Olympians.
Mm, long titles.
It is a long title, but it makes sense because he also does a second series, like a sister series, with the Roman incarnations of the same gods.
Really?
Yeah.
I would like to read
that. Same characters, Roman incarnations.
Super fascinating. Is it just called In the Olympians?
The next series, I don't remember, but I read the first book. I don't remember a lot about it, but I read the
first
book.
We'll research it, and then you have to listen next time to find out what the series is called.
Yeah. Sounds great. Some of you probably already know.
You're probably shouting it. I'll be like, it's da-da-da!
Yeah. So, did you want to give us a wee summary of the book?
I would love to.
/ movie, but mostly book.
Yes. As per the back of Rick Riordan's book, Percy Jackson is about to be kicked out of boarding school. Again. And that's the least of his troubles. Lately, mythological monsters and the gods of Mount Olympus seem to be walking straight off the pages of Percy's Greek mythology textbook and into his life. And worse, he's angered a few of them. Zeus's master lightning bolt has been stolen, and Percy is the prime suspect. So unfair. Now Percy and his friends have just 10 days to find and return Zeus's stolen property and bring peace to a warring Mount Olympus. But to succeed in his quest, Percy will have to do more than catch the true thief. He must come to terms with his father, who abandoned him, solve the riddle of the oracle, which warned him of a betrayal by a friend, and unravel a treachery more powerful than the gods themselves. Dun, dun, dun.
That's quite the quite the book jacket summary there.
It is. It's quite detailed. I think it tells a truer story than the film adaption. Obviously, that's natural because this is what the book is about. The film summary is similar. It's about Percy, Annabeth, and Grover basically doing a cross-country road trip, Olympian style, collecting pearls so that they can break into hell and
free
Percy's mother and then escape with the pearls, which they mathematically miscalculate that they would have four persons to take back rather than
three pearls.
Indeed, yeah. Yes, they didn't think about that.
Well, it's got a star-studded cast, the movie does. The book was released in 2005, and the film was released in 2010, so just 5 years later. And it does have a star-studded cast. We've got Sean Bean as Zeus, Pierce Brosnan as...
He doesn't even die in this one!
as Chiron. Steve Coogan as Hades, Rosario Dawson as Persephone, Catherine Keener as Sally, Percy's mom, Jane Pantoliano as Gabe, Uma Thurman as Medusa, and yeah, those are all huge names, and none of them are leading roles. None of them are for the kids.
I think casting here was interesting. They made interesting choices.
Yeah, it was not received well. 49% on Rotten Tomatoes. It did have a slightly higher... that was the critic rating, but it did have a slightly higher audience rating. What do you think the audience rating was?
Like 55%.
It was 54%.
That's pretty close. Still I knew it wouldn't great. Be. I knew it wouldn't be much higher than the critics' rating because, to be a fan, you most likely would have heard of the existence of the book, if not read it, and the deviations are quite tangible.
Yeah. It did gross
in the film
double what the budget was.
Yes, but that's probably why they made a second.
Yeah, I would attribute that mostly to the fans showing up to see the film initially and then being massively disappointed.
Yes, and also it was the time, like, to see, you know, teen superhero adventure films.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, this movie was directed by Chris Columbus, who I thought did a fine job with the first two Harry Potter films. So,
yes.
What happened there?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that kind of shows that a lot of the time it's about the team, not just the director, because the writers, I think, would have let the film down more so.
Yeah, this was written by Craig Titley, whose other notable scripts include Scooby-Doo. There's another one, but I forgot it.
You did tell me, and I've also forgotten it. But Scooby-Doo is... That's a good example of his style of writing, because Scooby-Doo is quite comedic, and I don't think that translated well into the world of Percy Jackson. And that
comedic? Kitschy?
Kitschy. I don't know what that word means.
It's like cheesy, but gratingly so.
Yes. Kitschy is the word, then.
Yeah.
And that just... For the book is serious... And the film did not capture that well. And so the stakes were not as high. And so at the end of the film, there wasn't that great payoff.
There wasn't. There wasn't a great payoff. There weren't great characters. Which is sad because there are great characters in the book. So I was pretty disappointed with that. So let's you know... Let's dive right in. What is the difference? What are the major differences between the book and the movie?
The first one I think we should talk about is just the plot. The film is completely different from the book. The book, they have more, I guess, of a structure, of a plan, of... Well, they actually have knowledge of the way that world works, whereas in the film, Percy sneaks off with Grover and Annabeth rather than being sent on the quest by Chiron, who is their mentor and teacher.
Yeah. So in the book, basically, a hellhound breaks into camp and that...
Is a catalyst?
Well, I was going to say it shows that there's an issue inside the camp because someone is...
Yes.
Someone had to have called the hellhound to allow into camp. Because it's heavily protected and, like...
This is Camp Half-Blood, if you don't know the series.
Yeah, I guess... So Percy is a demigod. He doesn't know at the start of the book. And... He finds out in school he's attacked by his teacher, and then he...
It sounds so...
Yeah, I know, it sounds so weird, but his teacher's actually a demon, so it's fine.
Yes, and in the book...
I mean, it's not fine, yeah.
It is the world that he lives in. So, I guess that in the context...
Major plot difference, they were sent on a quest, they don't sneak out of camp. Yes, I agree.
Absolutely. And that changes a lot of the context of things,
I feel. I would say a more major plot difference is, in the book, Chiron wants Percy to go to Hades, and because they think that Hades has the bolt and that he is trying to incite war between the gods.
Yes. And so in the movie, wants to prevent that.
Chiron wants Percy to just go to Olympus and say, I don't have the lightning bolt, I don't know who has it. But Percy also wants to go to Hades in the book because he wants to get his mom back. And the movie, he wants to go to Hades against the wishes of Chiron to get his mom back and doesn't care about the lightning bolt. But then at the end of the movie, he suddenly does care about it again.
Yes, the book random. And the film suddenly
It's a massive plot hole.
They merge at the end, but they don't build that in the characters at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that I think that's a major deviation. And then there are just some weird, like, characters/plot lines that are cut from the book. One of them being a major overarching one for the entire series. So they basically shut down the possibility of there being a franchise in the first film by failing to include the Kronos Tartarus dynamic.
Yes, absolutely. Because they, at the beginning of the book, you don't know this, but Kronos is basically the catalyst for one of the camp leaders, Luke, being more active about his hatred of the gods because he feels abandoned. And there is that whole... No?
Yeah, no. I was just shaking my head, but I was shaking my head because I hate the movie.
I'm so sure that happens.
Yeah.
And so with that being taken out and Kronos not being a character at all in the film, that basically stops, like you've said, a huge story from being able to be told in the rest of the films, which doesn't make any sense considering that it's a series of five. If you had any plan of going past the first book, and they made a second, I haven't seen the second film, but I'm very curious to considering it. What did you do? How could you have told the story?
I agree. It's really frustrating. Actually, there's a super famous, it's not that famous, it's famous in the world of Record Warden, so the movie came out over 10 years ago. About 10 years ago. And so he's recently released the emails that he wrote to the producers.
Oh, this is great. Please tell us about the emails.
And basically, he ripped the script to shreds. And that's what probably makes the deviation so frustrating. One of the major ones being they take out the Ares-Luke-Kronos dynamic and replace it with a scene that doesn't even happen, it doesn't need to be in there, it doesn't advance the motivations of the characters at all. It's just a weird deviation. And they also include...
What is the scene?
The Parthenon. So, in the book, the pearls that they used, they smash them and that releases them from Hades. It's how you can get out of Hades without dying. Out of hell. Yeah, out of Hades without dying.
His house.
Yeah. So they need the pearls to escape, and those are a gift to him from some sea naiads, some sea nymphs, via his father. They're basically they're
messengers from Poseidon.
Yeah, they're from his father, and the messengers of his father give them to Perseid. It's a very short, brief moment in the book. In the movie, it's a subplot where they have to go search for the pearls before they can actually get to hell. And it's a bad subplot. It doesn't need to be there.
Yes.
It's a deviation that could have been replaced by something else that actually happens in the book. And because of that, they go to the Parthenon, which has a pearl, when in fact, and this is the way that it should have gone. So they get off the bus after they're attacked, and then they take refuge in a diner, right? They could have, after they meet Medusa and kill her and defeat her, gone to the diner and met Ares.
Yes.
And recovered there and cut out the entire pool scene, which didn't need to happen. It was weird.
Yep.
And then they could have gone on to the water park instead of the Parthenon. And like that just slots in the Ares subplot and brings back in Tartarus and Kronos. And it's so much more interesting.
Yeah. And if they really wanted to, they could have had one of the pearls at the water park as well. So when they were on the mission for Ares, they could have gotten one of the pearls there as well.
Yeah. It would have made more sense.
It would have made more sense.
So the fact they cut out the water park and Hephaestus' spiders, which is really cool, is very disappointing. Especially to bring in the Hydra, which is a monster that Hercules fights in the Disney film. Like, we've already seen that monster. It just would have been more interesting.
There were also monsters from the book that didn't make it to the film because they added in monsters that didn't need to be there.
Yeah, like Cerberus.
Yes, Cerberus, as well as I would have liked to have seen more underwater creatures. Like, rather than Percy sitting in a pool for 20 minutes of the film at various intervals, I would have loved it for him to actually walk into the ocean or be under a lake, like he does in the book multiple times, and be talking to creatures of the sea.
Yeah, I agree.
That would have made just so much more sense. He's in a chlorinated pool!
Yeah, yeah.
That's definitely not... Poseidon doesn't live in a pool! He's the master of all seas.
Yeah.
Sorry for you.
No, I agree with you. I thought the pool scene was weird. It reminded me of The 13th Year, which is a Disney Channel original movie. And I don't like that Percy knew so much about himself as a demigod. Like, it's better that he doesn't understand why he's weird or different or an outcast.
Mm.
It makes him more compelling as a character. And it makes all of the steps to hide him as a demigod more realistic so that the monsters don't find him. If he was exercising his god powers, the monsters would be able to smell him much easier. And that's like, that's what it is. It's the world. They, even if they had changed all of the character and the plot dynamics, they changed the world. The world is so much better set up in the book, and it's so fascinating. And even though, like, there are parts of Rick Riordan's writing that I think is a bit cheesy, but I love it because the commitment to the world is so great.
Absolutely. I was actually even put off reading the book because I had seen the movie before, like, when it had come out before I read the book recently. And I was impressed with the book. I didn't think I'd enjoy it as much as I did, but it's a really fun adventure to go on, whereas the film is very cringy.
Yeah, it is a fun adventure. I resisted reading and loving this book, but my brother Daryl and my best friend Elisa both were like, "You have to read it. It's so good. You have to give it a chance." And I'm so glad that I did, because I love the book series. It feels like it's a part of my childhood.
Good.
Yes. There's another plot point that was cut out, which is the Oracle. So Percy, every time you go on a quest in the world, you have to go and see the Oracle, and the Oracle will give you a prophecy that's related to your quest. And that's, for him, it helps him get the cogs turning when he realizes that Luke has betrayed him, and that's really important. And it also keeps him from being perfectly honest with his friends, which again advances the plot, and is a dynamic you see in a lot of superhero-y type.
Mm.
They've
got the world on their shoulders. They don't know who to trust. Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
So that's a great element of just depth to the characters and a kind of darkness that the film didn't have at all. They were just like, "Hey, we've just met, but Annabeth, I dig you. I have strong feelings about you, but I don't know whether they're positive or negative." What the fuck is that?
Yeah. They also cut the bed stretch scene, which I think is real fun.
Yeah. That's a great scene with a demon who they meet in Los Angeles while they're looking for the entrance to hell. And they go to... Sorry, what was the name of the place?
I don't know. It's like something something's waterbed
place. Yeah, it doesn't matter. There's this man, and he is actually a demon, and he sells waterbeds, and they're exactly 6 feet long, all of them. And so when people come in to purchase them, they quickly find out he's a demon, and the customers get put on the bed and either stretched until they're 6 feet in length or decapitated or defooted if they are too long.
Yeah.
Yes.
I always imagined, when I read this book, Danny DeVito's, like, car shop from Matilda.
Yep.
Yeah, that's that really kind good. Of feel.
Yeah, just, like, run down and kind of, like, I kind of get creepy vibes off you. But
yeah, but he's like, "I've got a good deal for you. I'm going to drive you a hard bargain." Like,
you can trust me, even though you can't. Yeah, and that's... That is a scene that I was also said was cut, because in the book, I really enjoy justice, and I was really hoping that this would happen. So what happens in the book is Percy outsmarts the demon and gets him to try on one of his beds and gets the magical ropes to tie him down, and he is longer than 6 feet. And Percy goes to the end of the bed and decapitates the demon. And it's amazing.
It's really...
It's so satisfying.
It is. It's satisfying to think of a 12-year-old boy with this massive... sword that is like Greek and old and full of history, and then he just decapitates this demon.
Yeah. He doesn't do it like maliciously. This guy has captured Grover and Annabeth and is literally stretching them to death, so it's justified. And I just enjoy that it's not pandered to, like, "Oh, he's only 12 years old." Like, this is a series about monsters, and he has to kill people to continue either both surviving himself and also the plot. That, like, this is real life. Why? Sorry. Real life. Keep going.
Yeah, no. I definitely agree. I think the world building, that's one of the aspects, because it's known that demigods rarely make it past puberty, which seems to be a theme in these kinds of books and movies. That the special ones never make it past puberty because there's always someone hunting for them because they taste good, they smell good. And I think that it's really disappointing.
They smell good.
That they cut that aspect out from the films. They just didn't... There's so many wonderful things. Like, one of the first things about the book that really sold me on it is when the characters say, oh my gods, instead of oh my god, because they have been given definite proof that there are multiple gods, that it's a polytheistic universe. And so the phrase obviously goes from oh my god to oh my gods. And I just think that's such a good touch.
Absolutely. And as far as world building, the book really continues the theme, like, yes, there may be children of gods, but in reality, those gods are timeless, and so they are quite distant and separate, whereas in the film, the first shot we see is of Poseidon and Zeus talking in human form for some reason on top of the Empire State Building. That's not realistic.
I would have liked to see them in god form, although it would have been hard to convey, because the world they should have been in would be to scale to them, so... You know, they just look a bit bigger.
But that makes it easier to shoot.
But like, just like, because this the movie opens really beautifully with a lightning and thunderstorm, and then the lightning suddenly going out, which is great because it symbolizes the lightning bolt has been stolen.
Yes, that is really good. That first shot
so
is very solid.
Wonderful. And it's perfect.
And it's the way a film should be done, because it's an image and it's simple, but it gives you a lot of information.
Hmm.
Bam. Movies.
But then I would have liked if instead of Poseidon rising out of the water as this literal giant, not just a tallish human, which is what they are in the book, because they're like 10 feet tall. But in the book, in the movie, he's like 30, 50 feet tall.
He's
and he
taller
rises
than
from
a
the sea.
Yeah.
And that's another thing. They cut the mist out. The mist is a great aspect of the world, which is
yes. This
idea that humans are so distracted. That when they look at something that's magical, their brain makes logical leaps to keep it in line with the science they believe exists. So
yeah, absolutely. So they can see a fight in front of them between two Olympians, but in reality they might just see like two guys brawling and
yeah. That's
it, because their brain is justifying it in a way that they can comprehend for their reality.
And that's great. That's fantastic. It allows the Greek gods to still be active in our day and age.
Absolutely. And I think it would have made for some fantastic shots. Like, there's a really good scene in the book where Ares and Percy are fighting on a beach.
Yeah.
And they could have done some great wide shots in a film where they were circling behind and they were showing maybe the view of Annabeth and Grover watching the fight, which was the reality. And then you could go behind the humans watching it and just seeing two guys kind of shooting each other with guns.
Yeah.
That would have been epic.
It would have been. And then we could have just done away with that whole dumb fight scene between Percy and Luke at the end.
Yes.
It's weird because Luke's motivation for... Luke is a good guy. He is really nice to Annabeth and he's a great camp leader. He's a good guy. And so it doesn't make sense for him to have this big plot to cause a war between the gods if he isn't motivated by some reason. And he has to be more than just motivated to create a war between the gods that's going to create casualties of people that he cares about. He's got to have something else, and that's where Cronus comes in and makes him more murderous. And it just doesn't make sense for him to become this murderous person and quite dangerous without Cronus's interference. It's a juxtaposition, it's a paradox, the paradox of his character.
Yeah. Cool, yes. Some more differences in world building. I really didn't like how they took away the 12 cabins of the gods in the book. I thought that was really cool. That was a really nice way of showing how isolated Percy is in the book.
Yes.
Rather than it being, oh, like, awesome, I've got my own house on the water, hey! It's much more like, oh, I go from being with Hermes and all these new friends, like, oh, I'm alone again. I feel distant.
That's another thing, because in the book,
Because he's Poseidon's only child, that's why he's alone.
This is a weird thing in the movie. In the movie, Percy arrives at camp and almost immediately is told that his father is Poseidon, like everybody knows. But it is a running theme in the book that a lot of the kids don't get claimed. Not all the kids get claimed. A lot of kids are demigods who don't know who their parents are, because the demigods are frivolous and they just have sex with anyone.
The gods are frivolous.
Yeah, sorry.
Demigods are just...
The children are not having sex with anyone.
Yeah, they're children.
The gods are frivolous and they have sex with anyone they want to. And it's like, why would they change that? That's such an important...
It makes a lot more sense.
The distance between the parents and the kids is an important motivator and catalyst for the plot of the whole series.
Absolutely.
And they've just taken it out. And so what should have happened is Percy, in the movie, Percy arrives and he finds out that Poseidon is his father, and then they go play capture the flag. And he knows he's got water powers, which is dumb. If they had switched those orders, like all that stuff, that's all they had to do was switch the order, and Percy could have arrived, they could have played capture the flag, and then he would have discovered that he was Poseidon's son, and yes. Poseidon would have claimed him, and then...
He could have been shown as Kevin.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. So he could have been with the Hermes kids and like, oh, I've got a family now. He's never really had a family. He's never been popular. He's never had a lot of friends.
Mm. He's grown up with an abusive dad.
And so like, that would have created so much more for his character. And then he would have been in a big cabin with a lot of bunk beds, like a traditional camp cabin. They would have just been, like, the outside would have reflected the god that they were the cabin of. And then it would have been in the semicircle, like the... Like,
horseshoe.
The horseshoe shape.
Yeah.
As you would see in a lot of Greek architecture. And then he would have transitioned into a cabin that was empty and cold and dark. Mm.
Yeah,
with a lot of bunk beds that were unnecessary because he's the only kid.
Yeah, a great shot could have been him walking into the cabin and he's just in an open doorway, drops his bag, and there's just a shot of him, the back of him, looking at all these empty beds.
Yes, yes. And then when he drops his bag... Dust pops up.
Exactly, because no one has been there. And that would make us feel such empathy. And so we would feel lost with him because yep. he's not only just discovered he's a demigod, but he's like, wow, great. Now I'm alone in this again.
Yeah. And the cabin in the movie is weird. It's like fancy and like a
It's like sea. A beach house.
Yeah, it's like a beach house.
It doesn't have walls.
It doesn't have walls. And that's... sorry, we just heard some... like it sounded like knocking, but it wasn't. Somebody's building something.
Mm.
Stop building. We're recording a podcast. Yes. The cabins. And I think you get world building thing. The claiming of the demigods is so important and such an important plot.
It is.
Speaking of the gods.
Yes.
I think it's weird in the final scene. They show all 12 gods when Percy finally confronts them.
Yeah, in Olympus.
And they're all dressed like Greek gods. Like,
yes.
With togas and... the laurels, and I didn't like it because in the book, the idea in the book is that the Greek gods follow the heart of Western civilization, and so that's why it's in America.
Of course they do.
The author is American.
Yeah. Okay?
So that's why it's in America, and Olympus is above the Empire State Building, and Hell is in LA, and that's fantastic. What a fantastic concept that Olympus is in New York City, and
it's supposed
Hell
to be.
Is in LA, like... The rivalry that exists between L.A. and New York is perfect. The juxtaposition, the pair, it's great. I love it. They're contrasting. And so putting Olympus in one of them and Hell in the other is fantastic. And I really like that. And the idea is that they've sort of adapted to modern...
styles.
To modern styles. So, Poseidon is supposed to look like a beach bum. He's supposed to look, you know, like have his Hawaiian shirt and his cargo shorts and stuff. Like, I would have loved to see him in that first opening scene. I would have loved to see him rise out of the, like, be in the middle of the storm with thunder and like it raining and stuff, and him just surfing in all of it up to the beachfront like a badass. That would have been so cool. And it would have captured both the darkness and the humor of the book that is so prominent in Rick Riordan's writing.
Yeah.
I think that would have been cool.
I think there are lots of...
And
really
much better than a giant guy stepping out of the water like a douche.
Yeah. There are some great parallels that are done with that, like that New York and LA thing. And also Hell is obviously below us. But Olympus is literally floating Mount Olympus that is above the clouds. It's another thing. Percy actually comments on it in the book being like, how do people not notice this? But that's the mist again, with people justifying it away. And so that's a great like high-low thing that we don't have, because they're just like, yes, they're on top of the Empire State Building, but they just have some sort of magical elevator that just takes you there. Like, are you in a different dimension? Is that what they're implying?
It's so, yeah.
It's so vague.
Speaking of the gods again, the name reverence.
Reverence.
Yeah, there's like, everybody, Percy just throws around the name of the Greek gods.
There is
referencing
power
them.
In names. In any Greek mythology,
yeah.
They will talk about the power of a name.
Like, you invoke the name of the god Pan, you invoke the name of the god...
Classic god.
This is my deep, serious Greek voice.
Classic god.
You know, my favorite Greek god. And I just think they don't do that. In fact, there's a scene where Grover insults Hades, which is something that they would never do. You don't insult gods. They are extremely jealous and prideful and vengeful.
Yes, vengeful, absolutely. Especially, why would you not be surprised if Hades just struck you down for that? Like, your life as a mortal means nothing to an immortal being.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's frustrating because the Greek gods are supposed to be... they're like soap opera type humans. They're humans where they feel and express everything.
In the book,
in an absurd way. You know, you slight me, great, I'm going to kill you. Or I'm going to destroy your family. Or I'm going to destroy your land.
You stole my lightning bolt, I'm going to... the world.
You're 12 years old, I'm going to blow you up. Kind of stuff. Like, it's absurd. And that's why it's so fun.
Yes.
You know? And they really lose that. Like, Zeus is just kind of grumpy.
It would be more absurd as well, because if you're an immortal being... everything you've done before, you've had wars, you've had battles, you're looking to be entertained.
Yeah.
Because you've lived for so long.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's frustrating because Zeus is played by Sean Bean.
And Mr. Bean. No,
I want to see Zeus played by Sean Bean with the same...
Can you imagine Sean Bean playing? He's the guy who does milk.
Yeah. I want to see Zeus as Sean Bean... I want to see Zeus, played by Sean Bean, with the same exacting power as...
the Stark.
Yeah. Lord Stark. Does when he beheads the deserter in the first episode of Game of Thrones. That's what I want to see. I want to see that power. That sort of exacting, this is the way things are. You were not supposed to be born, Percy. I'm going to kill you. End of story. No mercy. Hell. Let's talk about hell. I just think that hell wouldn't be a very delightful place to be, but it would have been a more delightful place to be if it was the hell that was written about in the book. You know?
It would have been scarier. The book hell is scarier because it's much more realistic. Realistic is not the word I want, because there is no heaven in hell.
It's definitely realistic.
The hell of the book is full of souls, as you do see in the film, but there are different levels of hell, as you know, there are often in many religions, like how well you've behaved on earth, basically, how good of a person you've been, whereas they all seem to just be in the same fiery pit in the film. And
in the book, it's like the vast majority of people go to the Fields of Asphodel, which is just...
nothing.
Nothing. It's just nothing. You just stand there for all eternity.
Because a lot of the time in life, you're neither good nor bad actively. You're just existing. And so it makes sense that in death, this is...
you just exist.
This isn't a reward or a punishment. You didn't do anything noteworthy.
I wonder if that reflects Rick Riordan's beliefs that, you know...
the general population.
Will just be nothing, you know?
Classic!
And there's a place for heroes where the heroes go, and there's a place for the really bad where they...
it reminded me of a gated community.
Yeah. Exactly. And I love that. I love that the idea is the gated community, and I love that is an idea that is modern, and I love they put that in the book.
Yes.
And the entrance to hell, I think, is also worse in the movie. In the movie, it's more traditional to what you would think the entrance of hell looks like. It's real dark, and the gatekeeper is like this gaunt... gray circles under his eyes. I am scary and I am angry and I am death. I am death. But in the book, it's this real cool, like, record producer with fancy suits who's arrogant and real vain. And I actually pictured him as Michelle from Gilmore Girls, like this French guy who's like, I will let you pass even though you are not dead, because I would like you to persuade Hades to give me some money for my suits. I want them to be company paid for by the company. They're very expensive, and I have looks. I have looks that I have to maintain. You know, like, I want him to be real, like, you know.
Yeah, that's the quote that I read from the book where they are entering hell, which goes from being in the elevator to actually transforming into the boat. And I really like the way the story is told, like it's a business. Like,
yeah.
I like that, because when you actually meet Hades, he talks about, why would I want a war? More of you are dying than ever. I've had to expand hell 3 times. That's great. That's great world building. Because
yeah.
in reality, that's what happens. No matter what you do in life, everyone dies. So of course, Hades would be annoyed about increased population.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with you. And I really liked, I like what you just said. It's a business. I actually thought about this in the movie, The Entrance to Hell is in the Hollywood Sign, which I always really liked. But actually, it makes sense that in the book, it's at a record company, which makes sense because it's that whole, like, you make a deal with the devil and you get a music. Yes, that's so, Rick Riordan, I do not give you enough credit. That's really good. That's so good. You just made me realize that. Like, it's really funny. But
and
yeah.
that's another that's a character that we never got to meet. Like, yes, we meet
I mean, we meet him, but he's
It's not, we don't know him. No. We meet the fairy man, but that is not Charon.
Yeah, it's just...
I really can't say that name.
Just so disappointing.
Charon.
Yeah, let's talk about the characters.
Let's!
So, Maddie already knows this, because we obviously talk about this all the time. Leading up to recording, and little fun fact, we watched this movie last weekend, so things are a little fuzzy, but I said, I wrote this down, Annabeth should have been played by Blake Lively, and the only thing that I said is maybe the reason they didn't consider Blake Lively is because she was quite old at the time. The characters were originally supposed to be 12 years old, as they are in the book, but they aged them up to 17 for some godforsaken reason. and I looked it up. And
which also limits the amount of films they can make, because they're adults.
Yep. And Rick Riordan was like, hey guys, just, you know, in his emails that I told you about earlier, he was like, hey guys, just, you know, if you want this to be a franchise, if you start them at 17, they're going to be 25 or whatever by the time this ends, and nobody wants to watch that. So you've limited yourself. But Alexandria Daddario, who plays Annabeth, is actually a year older than Blake Lively. So they could have gotten Blake Lively and still had someone with light hair and light eyes, which is what Annabeth looks like, because that's what Athena looked like, and she's a daughter of Athena.
Just for the record, Blake Lively wasn't actually, like, considered for this. This is just something that Brie would have much preferred. And I agree, because of the look that Annabeth should have had.
Which is like this beachy goddess.
Absolutely. She's supposed to be just classically, strikingly beautiful.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that
Alexandria
the
Dario.
Actress who played her is not. She's very pretty, but she's not what Annabeth is supposed to look like.
No.
And Percy also doesn't have the striking blue eyes I wanted him to have.
Yeah.
There are some shots where they digitally change that, but a lot of the time if I... because we look for this stuff, obviously. Anyway.
But like, you know, there's a scene in Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants where Blake Lively is wearing a baseball cap and her hair is like in a messy bun. And it is exactly what I think Annabeth would have looked like, because she wears her hat that her mother gave her, which is a gift from Athena, which is a New York Yankees cap that allows her to go invisible. And that's what I think of every time I think of Annabeth. You know, casting.
Yes. And she doesn't have to try. Like, they always make... let's just go on a bit of a let's have a sit down now, everyone. Let's have a little discussion just about females in film in general. Annabeth is written to be powerful because she is. Her mother is the god of war. The god the god of
wisdom.
Her mother is
that other W word that is so different from war.
But it's like strategy planning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Her mother, she's good at war, but she's not the god of war. That'd be Ares.
Her mother is the goddess of wisdom. And so Annabeth does have an arrogance to her, but it is deserved. Not only has she been at the camp for a very long time training, that has been her life. It's not her whole life, unlike in the film. She's only been there...
for 5 years.
5 years. 5 years.
5 camp beads.
5 camp beads. 5 years. And she is made out to be, in the film, just...
a damsel in distress in every way. She looks to Percy every time something happens.
And they ask him to plan. And I just find that so odd, considering that Annabeth and Grover actually live in this world. He's literally been introduced for it for a day, a week. And
yeah.
They're like, what do you think we should do, Percy? What are you? No, Percy is supposed to be a bumbling buffoon, because that is what he is in this world. He's new kid. He's a new kid on the block. Like, he's just...
He's a 12-year-old who's just discovered that he has demigod powers. And one of the big three demigod powers, which is quite significant. And he's trying to figure out his powers, but he's not clever about it. He can only rely on his instincts, but he will be outmaneuvered by anyone who's had any real training.
Yes, absolutely.
It's like the scene in Medusa, right?
Yes.
In the book, Annabeth gives Percy the idea to look at the reflection to fight Medusa.
Yes.
And in the movie...
Which is sense, because that's a strategy, and she would know. He wouldn't know.
Annabeth is caught being a damsel in distress, and Percy and Grover come up with it together. And it's so dumb.
It's so dumb. She also drives a car in that scene, which doesn't make any sense because she doesn't live in that world. She doesn't know how to drive.
Yeah. And she drives a car with her eyes closed because she can't look at Medusa. And she manages to... So she would have presumably had to leave the Emporium, which is very large, get a car, know how to use it, turn on, have the keys... And then drive to the exact spot where they were. Through a wall.
With her eyes closed.
With her eyes closed.
Yeah, writing. That's plot for you. Hey.
And that was the best way to deal with that.
Film magic. Rather than doing what the book did, which was already there. You have it written. We talk about this every time. You have the story there. Follow the story. How do they win in the book? Grover has the flying shoes. He knocks into her.
And that's not to say that there weren't cuts made. I don't mind, for example, that they cut out the scene with the dog that is telepathic with Grover. That helps them find... They use the reward money to buy a bus ticket to Colorado.
Yeah,
I don't
fine.
Mind that.
They could have... Yeah, exactly. They could have... When they were at Medusa's lair, they could have just found some money. That's fine. Like, you can cut the dog out. I really enjoy world building with
them. They did actually find money in the book.
They did, and they end up not needing it. And they just give that money to the ferryman. Female characters. I also...
You want to talk about the Annabeth Percy love scene? At the pool?
It's ridiculous. I want to talk about Annabeth. I want to talk about the mum. I want to talk about Clarice. And I want to talk about...
The sons of Ares? And just everything. You're right. Tell me about the sons of Ares.
Just everything. In chronological order, these are the mistakes. I'm using that strong word, mistakes. Luke and Percy are running through the forest in the capture the flag game that is played completely wrong. And in the middle of a forest, they get ambushed by the sons of Ares who jump out of the trees. These should be...
The daughters of Ares.
They should be, but also because it was written in the book. The daughters of Ares, because in the book, there is a conflict between Clarice and Percy that would have just... Sure, you can brush over it in the film. You don't have to introduce that character. But why have them as son of Ares? Just have them ambushed by the daughters of Ares and be like, oh, hey, if you're a fan of Clarice because she's a powerful fighter as a woman, then here she is. This little scene's for you.
A little bit of fan service.
Yep. Yeah. Hey, that's a good phrase. Fan service. Exactly. That would have been great. The mum, she's supposed to be a goddess among women. She's much too meek in the film. Yes, we all know she's staying with Gabe for reasons to protect Percy. In the end of the film, she makes the decision to get rid of Gabe. Because
on her own.
On her own, yeah. Percy gives her the means and says, you're right, it is up to you. This is a choice you made to protect me, but I'm okay now because I know more about my powers. I'm in a different environment. You don't need to be with this man who hits her. Let's just talk about that. It's not funny. In the film, it's like, hey, I'm kind of a drunk. Hey.
It's super sexual as well. Like, I know that would have been a dynamic, but I would have rather see the violent side.
Did you just burp?
I did just burp. I'm sorry. Excuse me. I would have rather seen the violent side of Gabe Ugliano, which is a fantastic name. Well done. Well done, Rick Gordon Ugliano.
Yes. And there's a beautiful scene at the beginning where Mum and Percy go away. I'm a New Zealander, if you can't tell. Sorry. Mum and Percy. Mum and Percy go away to the cabin where she actually stays with Poseidon, where they make Percy. I didn't need to say
that. That's great. I love it. Make Percy.
And, you know, she...
She's sitting there on the bed. She pats out the cupboards. Come here, Percy. This is where you were made.
Oh, that's so nasty. But there were just character traits she could have... that would have been... You were talking before.
I don't mind they cut that out. But like I said... I did say this before. it would have been great if she had just brought some of the blue candy. Yes. Blue muffins, something. Something for Percy to show that they have a deep connection that they've always had. And that would have been really nice.
Absolutely.
Because I did not give a fuck when she was captured. I was like, oh, Mum's captured.
Whoops. Yay, catalyst for the story to continue. Woo. Yeah, so I miss Clarice. I don't like the way the mum was portrayed. I don't like the way that Annabeth was portrayed. Annabeth.
Tell me about the pool scene. Tell me about the pool scene, Maddie.
Pool scene.
So.
You have more of an issue with that. I have an issue with when they get the second pearl from the
Parthenon.
Parthenon.
Oh, you okay, great. Fine. All right, I'll talk about this. I will do this. So, there's a scene in the movie where they're staying at an inn, which is, whatever, fine.
But an inn? Like a motel?
Like a motel, yeah. And there's a scene in the movie where Percy is in the water down by the pool, and Annabeth comes and talks to him, and there's this flirting and sexual tension, and it's really frustrating.
It's so forced.
It is forced, and it's unnecessary because this, again, this series happens over 5 books, and there's a wonderful plot in it about Annabeth's struggle. Annabeth has been at the camp for 5 years, and she's known Luke for 5 years, and she admires him. They went through a battle trying to get to the camp together. He has saved her life.
One of their close friends died really good, when they were making the way to the camp.
Yeah. They're really good friends, and Annabeth likes Luke. Annabeth is probably, to some extent, as much as a 12-year-old can be, in love with Luke, and when she finds out that he's turned on Percy, she feels really conflicted about her emotions towards him. And it becomes like a weakness / plot issue in the series about Annabeth wanting to trust Luke again.
Mm.
And that's one of the reasons why she has issues being friends with Percy. They always develop a good friendship, but she also starts to develop feelings for Percy, which is an inevitable part of the plot. But it happens so much later, and again, it grows over time.
And it should happen later, because they're 12.
Yeah. Annabeth is intelligent. She's smarter than Percy. She's better trained than Percy. She thinks she's all that in every way. It's one of her character flaws, which comes up in the next book, actually. And it's really annoying to have such a powerful woman have this guy who's know-nothing in every way walk in. She's like, oh, let me just swoon over him a little.
He's got swagger.
Yeah.
He's much more arrogant in the film than he should be in the book.
In the book,
he is in the book.
He's sort of an unintentional hero. He would have been perfectly happy not to have that life, to have a simple, quiet life.
Yeah, he's a reluctant hero. Game.
Yeah,
which is satisfying to watch. And the more we talk about this, the more I really think they missed a huge opportunity where this could have been just like Harry Potter. Like, you have a really similar sense of a magical world. For some reason, there's always 2 boys and 1 girl.
It has the exact same dynamic as the trio in Harry Potter. You've got the reluctant hero,
yep,
who just wants a family.
The intelligent, strong woman that is made fun of for being a know-it-all, even though that's literally how you survive a lot of the time. And then the comedic best friend!
Yeah, who's super nerdy. Well, okay, Ron's not super nerdy, but he's a bit of a geek.
He's a dork.
He's a dork, yeah, yes. Yeah. Grover's supposed to be a dork, and in the... Oh, let's just... Yeah, shall we move on to Grover? Grover is supposed to be a dork. He's supposed to be covered with
Grover's
acne.
Character is disturbing in the film. He's much too sexual.
He's so sexual. Almost every scene that he's in has to do with women. And, oh, there's this disgusting scene at the end where he stays in hell. With
heaven.
Persephone, and there's an implied sexual tension between Persephone, who is like literally 2,000 years his senior, and Grover, who is essentially a teenager, and it's pedophilic and weird.
He is 12. In the film, he's 17, sure, but it's still weird. It doesn't need to happen. It's not appropriate.
Yeah, it's just weird. It's so inappropriate.
they make it okay by giving him a goatee. Hey, he's got facial hair. He's an adult.
But he chases the women at the camp, and then he's like, Percy, I don't want to leave the Logos Casino. Look at all these ladies, they want me. And I'm like,
your bottom half is a goat.
This is weird.
Just want to put that in there. His bottom half, in the film and the books, is a goat.
And he's, yeah, I just...
Bestiality. Anyway.
The other thing about Grover is that he... is supposed to be trying to get his searcher's license. He failed protecting Annabeth and Luke and Talia, Zeus's daughter, in a scene that happens before the book. And so this is his chance to get a searcher's license. He wants to get a searcher's license so he can find the great god Pan,
yes,
who is their god. It is the god of the...
nature. No.
Pan is a nature god, but what's the word?
Environment.
No. What is Grover? He's a satyr. Pan is the god of the satyrs because they are
what
all...
What is satyr? No, sorry. What is Grover?
They all care about nature. That's their environment. He's Absolutely. Also a huge environmentalist.
Yeah, Grover makes multiple comments throughout the book about humans and how they pollute.
And he nervously eats Pepsi cans and Coke cans, and I thought that was wonderful, and I really liked it, and I missed it in the movie.
He eats them in the movie.
But not nervously.
No, you see him just snack on one randomly. I thought about that when I was watching it. I was like, what is that made of? Like, sugar? Yeah.
And the junior protector thing. Oh, the junior protector.
His horns. I thought about that. Go.
No, you talk about the horns. I don't know what you're talking about.
In the book, because they're a part of his physiology is totally the word. In the book, because they're part of his physiology, can't say it, Grover has horns, which he has to cover
with his hair.
In the book, in the film, he gets them for a successful mission. What are you telling me? You physically can alter people when they've achieved certain goals?
Is
this a video game?
Horns, they're growing in.
Oh, I got 10 hero points. Bing, bing.
There was a review that was like, this is a bad video game plot.
Accurate.
Get the pearl. 10 points. Blah, blah. I agree.
Beat the devil.
I don't mind that they cut out the Pan subplot.
I do, because I'm an environmentalist.
I understand for like streamlining the plot. I can understand why they cut that out. Whatever, fine. It's fine. But I would have appreciated if they had done something with like a parallel by creating Grover's role as a parallel to something in our universe, like a police officer or a bodyguard. Instead of calling him a junior protector, just call him like a novice, you know?
Yeah, or like a cadet.
Yeah, a cadet, or like there's a board, like a cadet or a police officer, he wants to be a detective.
Yeah.
You know, I would have appreciated that a lot more, because it would have been like, we can't include this plot line, but we want to stay as true to the ideas and the feel of the book and the world and the universe that Rick Riordan so lovingly created. Yeah, Grover.
Yeah. Just the last characters. Yeah, Clarice.
Doesn't exist.
Clarice doesn't exist. I talked about that with the sun.
Mr. D doesn't exist.
Ares doesn't exist. He is a huge part of the plot. He literally gives the missions.
He just exists, but it's just a cameo. Because he's in the at the end when he meets all the gods to confront them.
Is he? Which one is he?
He's one of them.
Oh,
cool. All the gods are there.
Cool.
All the main 12 gods.
Yeah, but they look stupid. He's supposed to be a badass biker guy who's like really threatening. And he's the god of war. When he walks into a room, there is...
People get angry.
They get frustrated. They get aggressive. And they don't know why until he releases them from under his control.
And I really like that. Again, like,
I really like that too.
The archetypes, like... You know, Poseidon is a surfer guy, and Zeus is the powerful CEO guy, and Ares is the biker guy. Like, that's a real fun element of the world they don't create in the movie, and it's really frustrating.
Because they would have adapted to our society. And the last one is, Mr. D, who is...
It's quite significant. Mr. D and Clarice are both quite significant that they've been cut, because...
Which is Dionysus.
And actually, no, Nancy Boba Fett is cut.
Boba Fett.
Is cut. Who is the bully from Percy's human world school that he attends. I think it's important that Percy has a lot of bullies in his life.
Because?
He's got Nancy Boba Fett. Yeah. It's part of his character. He's
an underdog.
Yeah.
He's always been picked on.
He's always been picked on, and he wants to stand up to people, and he's got a sense of justice because of it.
Yeah.
But also a sense of vengeance.
Yeah.
And
definitely.
Nancy Boba Fett. And there's a sense of injustice in the world.
Yeah, he's made out to be more of a cool guy in the film rather than someone rising up, realizing his new power and his destiny.
Yeah.
He's kind of like in the film, like, hey, I'm accepting that this is who I am.
Also, I think Mr. D and then Grover as well. But like Mr. D could have been a great comic relief character for
Mr.
the movie.
D could have been played
by Danny DeVito.
By Danny DeVito.
Again.
Hard,
yes.
Hard
that would have been great.
That would have been so funny.
He's at Camp Half-Blood as a punishment for sleeping with...
A nymph. He shouldn't have slept with.
Yeah.
Or was it druid?
Something.
Not
he
yet.
Slept with someone he wasn't supposed to sleep
with. A nature
with.
Lady that was off limits.
Yeah. And
he's a
so
naughty,
he,
naughty man.
He hates all the campers, but he especially hates Poseidon. I mean,
Percy,
because he's a god, he's a demigod of the big three.
Yes. Who aren't supposed to have babies.
Yeah. And I just think that that would have been a great, I just think that if Percy was forced to overcome and prove his bullies wrong as well as everything else, that would have been a good motivator for Percy. And I'm bummed that he was cut. And also Danny DeVito would have been amazing.
That would have been amazing. And Poseidon, just the gods in general, their reasoning for things are completely different. And I think I've already talked about this. Poseidon doesn't justify to Percy why he's been absent. Poseidon is a god. He's busy. He is immortal. He is indifferent, almost, to his children. Whereas,
and it makes sense because Percy is only going to live for his human life.
Yep.
And Zeus and Poseidon have been alive for thousands of years.
Thousands of years. And naturally,
essentially,
maybe they don't want to get attached.
All of time. Yeah. And they have literally hundreds and hundreds and thousands of children.
Yes, yes. Like, you are a blip.
In their lifespan.
Yeah. And we just pandered to in the film. Like, he's like, Percy.
He's like, I really care about you.
I would have loved to have been there, but you and your mother distracted me from being...
A good god.
So, in a way, it's your mother's fault.
And in the Greek...
Her vagina distracted
gods
me.
Gods have always been known for doing good god things.
Yes.
Caring about their people and being impartial and fair.
Yes, gods are not... Never tyrants. Never, never, never. Anyway, good job.
Good job, Percy.
I'm proud of you, Percy.
I'm proud. I wanted to be there.
Didn't you hear me whispering to you in your head? And then Percy's like, I heard you.
Poseidon does seem to care about Percy a little bit in the book, but it seems to be more as a product of, he's my son, I don't want him giving me a bad name.
Yeah, that's totally fair. But also, why does he claim him if he's worried about that?
I think it's both. Like, there's an element of both. Like,
and probably an arrogance. Like, I want
it
you
is,
to be
it is like,
impress
you're
me.
My son.
Yeah.
You know? It's,
you're mine.
Yeah.
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 Do well, or I'll be pissed.
Yeah. It's like you don't get to kill my son. I'm a god.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I do think that he cares about his son, but in a, I only have as much time as I do to care about you kind of way.
Absolutely. Mm. I have an entire planet filled with more water than Earth, actually, to run.
Okay, so we've talked a lot about how the movie fails as an adaptation. Does it fail as a film?
Yes.
I agree. I would say there are some redeeming aspects of it. I would say that some of the casting is quite good.
Yeah, some of the visuals are interesting.
I think Luke was cast well. I think that if Grover didn't have acne... which he doesn't in the movie, but I think if he had been if his character had been written closer to the character in the book, I wouldn't have minded his casting necessarily.
Yeah, definitely less played like also a jock. Like, he was very promiscuous.
He just seemed like a stereotypical black best friend character. Like, Grover. But some of the casting was good. I think
Zeus was good.
I didn't mind the casting of... Actually, I didn't mind most of the adult casting. Uma Thurman
adults.
Was fine.
Yeah.
I thought that the casting of Mrs. Dobbs, who we didn't talk a lot about, but is one of the monsters, I thought she was great. I don't mind Chiron. I don't mind Zeus. I don't mind Poseidon.
I would have liked Chiron to just be...
Pierce Brosnan?
Pierce Brosnan is a great actor, but I would have liked someone to have been like...
Real fit.
You're the upper half of a horse. You would be buff.
Yeah, yeah. I agree with that.
But he's got a great presence.
He does. He has a fantastic presence. And I just think that all of it comes down to where the movie really failed, for me, was the writing, you know?
Absolutely.
Which we've talked so much about, but the writing...
and the plot.
The characters were not compelling. The witty one-liners they tried to have, like... I definitely have strong feelings for you, but I haven't decided in what way yet. Like,
it was like a bad...
Whether they're positive or negative.
A bad, like, after school, like, made-for-TV movie.
Yeah. I did talk about this briefly off the podcast, but I would have liked to see, like, a slightly darker Spy Kids kind of commitment to the world.
Yeah, absolutely. The tone needed to be different.
Yeah, and you know what? As an adult, I'm 26 years old now. I still like watching the first Spy Kids. I still like the second Spy Kids. The third Spy Kids is garbage. I watch
Harry Potter films all day, every day, and they start off with 11-year-olds.
Mm.
And that's great. Like, they go into the Forbidden Forest, and you're scared.
Yeah.
And it's great.
Yeah.
Why? With that tone, like, that is a perfect example of how you can do a film about 11-year-olds, and it be dark and comedic and entertaining and engaging, and there are risks and there are payoffs because you care about the characters. It's a well-told story. There are still ridiculous jokes. A troll literally gets a wand up its nose.
Yes, that's so good. Yes, and you just reminded me of something.
I'm so engaged
with you right now. You just remind me of something, or made me think of something. You just inspired me with that little ranting. I loved it.
Thank you.
The dynamic between Percy and Annabeth should have been the dynamic between Hermione and Ron in the first movie. You have dirt on your nose, by the way.
Did you know?
That would have been great. I wanted to see Annabeth to try and school Percy just like that, you know? That absolutely. Arrogance but cleverness that's totally deserved. Yeah. And a little bit over the top. It's not Leviosa, it's Leviosa. Like, that would have been, you know, that kind of power on screen would have been fine. And I mean, the acting isn't perfect, the script isn't perfect, but it's just so much better.
It is. And when you've got films like that as an example of how it can be done well, so it's both not too dark for children, but engaging for adults. Why are you not using this as the template? Why are you aging up characters? Why are you literally backing yourself into a corner?
I don't know. So that
sequels can't be made. Like, yes, it's more of a risk on the, I guess, aging of the actors and their, like, ability and if they want to stay engaged for the series. But that's why you just need to go big or go home. Like, stop half-assing movies.
Rick Riordan.
Stop it!
Rick Riordan even says in his emails that he's like, I'm aware that you want to appeal to teenage audience and they're a strong demographic and you're afraid that if you cast younger kids that they won't be interested. But the thing is that if you make a movie as good as Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, you're going to engage teenagers.
Yes, and there would have been...
And adults.
Children.
And children.
Who read the books and then became teenagers and were like, oh, I'd love to see this book. Oh, when has that happened before? Oh, Harry Potter. Children read books and then became teenagers and went to see a film about 11-year-olds because they'd read the books.
Yeah, yeah. And the Hunger Games?
Yes, Hunger Games. Even Divergent, which I didn't really like that much. But maybe, I haven't read the books, I just thought the films were pretty crap. we foreshadowing? We haven't got it on the list. Well, we do have it on the list. Anyway, overall review.
That's our post-apocalypse dystopian society section.
Yeah, sorry, that will be another season. Ooh, are we doing multiple seasons? Ooh.
Yes, we are.
overall review, book to film adaption, bad for so many reasons. Overall review of the film, bad. I probably will be fine never watching the film again. I will probably
I'm never going to watch it again.
I will reread the book, though. Thought the book was great. It's
easy. I'm going to read it to my children.
Our children.
Rick Riordan.
Our children.
We're going to read it to our children.
Yeah.
Please listen to our podcast. We love you. Thank you. Bye. No. There's just one more thing I want to talk about the film, because I did think that the visual effects weren't bad. I thought that when
weren't bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I was just clarifying. I said it really quickly.
I thought the visual effects were pretty good. I thought the storm, like we talked about at the beginning, it was great. I thought that when they fight...
I thought the beasts, the monsters...
The monsters...
It looked good.
...were interesting.
Yeah, that's where the budget went.
Yeah. I thought the casino looked wonderful.
Yeah, the Lotus Casino is solid. That's how it looked.
That's how Vegas looks to me.
Yeah, and that's how it looked in the book.
We've been there.
Yes, we have been there.
And I think that the initial scene when they're on the boat and they're looking into hell, even though it wasn't the scene that we wanted, it still looked good.
And it had the garbage, which I digged. I was about that.
And I think that's one of the only lines they almost copied word for word, because I believe that he does say it's like dreams and hopes.
Yeah, but he does say that, but I think Percy actually asked the question, "Oh, I get so angry! Stop giving lines that are said by women to men and stop cutting women."
Yeah.
You're literally changing what society expects from films. Just be better.
Yeah. Some of the casting was great. Some of the visual effects were great, but it doesn't really matter if it looks pretty and the casting is good if you don't write compelling characters and you don't have a compelling plot.
And scene.
So I guess we should transition into one of my favorite. Let's do the review thing. So you said that as a book-to-film adaptation, what would you rate it as at a scale of 1 to 10?
As a book-to-film adaptation?
Yeah.
3.
Okay.
It had the same characters. That was about the same similarities.
Mm. Yes. Okay. as a book-to-film adaptation, I would say... I will give it a 4.
It does resemble
the plot. They do resemble the characters, but it deviates from the world and from the tone and from the messages. And I think that is...
I'm still annoyed about the cabins. I would have loved to have seen those cabins.
Reproachable. Yeah. as a film, on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rate it?
2.
Whoa, you go lower? I would go higher. I would say it's like a 5. Because I did find it visually interesting. The writing is just so bad.
It's so bad. And I'm... If you're watching it... That's why the opening scene is so solid. I've just said this before. You see thunderclouds over New York, setting the scene. All of a sudden, no lightning. No one is talking. I don't think there's even any music. You say so much with that image. That is film. That is storytelling. It is being done well. It doesn't have to be over the top. It doesn't have to be complicated. The best things are often the most simple.
Yeah. I think that something that would have been done, it would have added a lot to the film for them to show more and say less.
Yes! Oh my god! That's amazing! Show more, say less!
Yeah. I mean, from...
That should be our, like, catchphrase of the show.
From the whispers from his dad, to the lack of the dream sequences, to Chiron's weird loquaciousness, I think it would have...
Loquacious to a foot.
If it had been a quieter movie with...
Yeah, that would have added such a somber feel. Ah, oh, babe, you hit it on the head.
Thanks.
Such good wording.
Thank you.
But yeah, shall we do your final section, which you love so much? Please introduce it, because I always mess it up.
So the final section is where we decide if we want to redo it, remake it, or retire it. So a redo is where they completely redo it. Start over, new chance, new slate.
So they
try to do a better adaptation and a better film. A remake is the same film, same story, same plot, same ideas.
Please don't.
but just updated with better CGI, new actors kind of thing.
Mm.
And then retire it is just, it was always better as a book, or you can't top what was already done.
Leave it alone. Yeah. We did The Princess Bride was a retire, because it's just, both are classics. But anyway. Mm. Percy Jackson.
I would love to see a redo.
I would love a redo. I don't know why. Why have we had 5 different Spider-Mans in that amount of years? This is a great book series. Like, someone please just buy the rights and do it better and blow my mind. I would love to see that. I would pay, as an adult, just telling you now, I'm going to give you money to see this film done well.
I agree. I want to see it redone. I would like to see Netflix redo it. I would like to see BBC redo it. I would be interested in seeing Disney streaming, Disney Plus maybe redo it.
You want to see BBC do everything.
I really like BBC.
I want to see BBC's The Golden Compass. You know, cool. And again, we are anonymous.
We're anonymous? You did it again! We're unanimous! Unanimous! Although unanimous is a bit of an overkill for 2 people. Ah, classic Maddie.
We are in agreement.
We are in agreement. We are in agreement.
I'm just going to... yeah, so please come back and see us. Come back and listen to us next week.
Mm. If you enjoyed this podcast and the new dressings we've given it, slightly different, please like, rate, review, subscribe. Subscribe to it wherever you listen to podcasts. Yeah, this is Chapter 1, Take 2, and I'm Brianna.
And I'm Maddie.
And we're signing off.
Yeah, and we encourage you to read.
We do. Read, eat your vegetables, particularly broccoli,
jog,
carrots, drink water,
yeah, lots,
sleep.
At least 7 to 8 hours a day.
Mm-hmm. This is the advice from clever, aged, well-read individuals such as us.
Yeah, we've been married for 5 whole years. We know shit.
Mm.
Bye!
Toodaloo!
Hey team, we were originally going to be doing the Neverending Story next week, but we loved the Percy Jackson book series so much that we did the Sea of Monsters instead. So stay tuned next week when we'll be covering the book-to-film adaptation of Percy Jackson and the Sea of Monsters. Thanks, guys!
I know!